Ease and what enslaves the mind? Well, we get on Zoom and we get on our computer, we should say, and lo and behold, the answer is right before me. You will be free. You will never be free until you free yourself from the prisons of your own false thoughts. That is the essence of our conversation this morning. So what are those? So what is the premise, or how do we undertake this question and thoroughly understand it to mean that why is the mind become enslaved, and becoming free, what does that mean? So we come to this question, and we want to know, well, what is mind? How that's going to be free? What is it? Well, we know that on this plane of existence, there exists an intelligence, and we sort of call it the perceiver or our consciousness in each life. So before getting into this, we just like to give you a few thoughts from the voice of the silence that gives us an insight into mind. Having become indifferent to objects of perception, the pupil must seek out the Raja of the senses, the thought producer, he who awakes illusion. The mind is the great slayer of the real. Let the disciple slay the slayer. And further on, it says, for the mind is like a mirror. It gathers dust while it reflects. It needs the gentle breezes of soul wisdom to brush away the dust of our illusion. Seek, O beginner, to blend thy mind and soul. And lastly, I'd like to share that thou canst create this day, thy chances for thy morrow. In the great journey, causes sown each hour bear each its harvest of effects, for rigid justice rules the world. With mighty sweep of ne'er-erring action, it brings to mortals lives of weal or woe. Karmic progeny of all our former thoughts and deeds. Take then as much as merit hath in store for thee, O thou of patient heart. Be of good cheer and rest content with fate. Such is thy karma, the karma of the cycle of thy birth, the destiny of those who in their pain and sorrow are born along with thee. Rejoice and weep from life to life. Chain to thy previous actions. Mind is a universal principle. So, how do we understand then what mind is? Well, we are told that everything is a spark of the divine. Every material thing is a spark of the divine. And it goes through an evolutionary process where it descends into matter and gathers about it the experience of life. And at one point, the form had been perfected for, or at least, the incarnation of mind, because mind is latent in all of life. For we are told that everything exists of Atma Buddhi, and latent within that is manas. And it's not till the it's well, it actually it is a slow progression of this Atma Buddhi, or we call monad, through existence that builds up until a point where its consciousness has gone through all the lower forms of consciousness and acquired the understanding and the knowledge to create. And then it came to the point of being a vessel for the divine to incarnate into. And that's when man appeared upon the stage. So ideas rule the world. Great philosophers have said that. Well, ideas about what? Well, ideas about who and what we are, where we've come from, where we're going. And the greatest idea that really captivates everyone's mind is God. So here we have a basis on which we can consider what is true and what is false. So to do this, we use our faculties or our mind. But what faculties of our mind are we using? And how is our mind operating today? Am I that perceiver? What is that perceiver? What is that that sees all the changes? So we are on that evolutionary journey, but we have become self-conscious. And that self-consciousness makes us as gods, because now we can choose. And this is where discrimination comes in. This is where we have to discern the true from the false. So we go back to the idea of an outside God. Well, we would think that that's the difference between Socrates and Aristotle. That the forces outside of you determine who you are, whether you can survive in that environment, that the journey is outside of us. Well, no, the theosophy states that the journey is within us, so that this journey isn't of one lifetime, it's of many lifetimes. That's a false idea. So what does that do? That free the mind, or does it enslave it? Well, the idea that something outside of us controls us or has an influence over us. And the very fact we look outside ourselves is we're giving up our power. Our power lies within to discern the true from the false. So when you give it away, or you look outside yourself for the answer, you're not exercising that muscle of intuition, of developing that inner sight. Another thing, another idea of people feel that life isn't fair. Why should some have much and many have so little? And what is my place in all of this? What is my responsibility? So it brings up the idea of karma. That everything we see, everything that comes to us, we have been a part of in some time in our existence, in our many incarnations. It states in theosophy, we are the creators of our own world by the choices we make. Where we find ourselves is we've chosen or we've not chosen. We've just let it go and let the universe choose for us. But karma teaches us that, yeah, we bear some kind of effect because we see it, we feel it. What is our responsibility in it and to it? So an enslaved mind can't consider that. It has trouble dealing with universals. You know, the concept of God is not even a principle. It's beyond the scope of our understanding. It's unknowable. So that in itself, that if we truly believe that we are a spark of the divine, that leaves our potentiality illimitable. And here we are, stuck in these puny bodies that are disease-ridden and trying to find the truth and act in accordance with it. Well, the only way we can do that is by what frees the mind and what enslaves it. The idea of karma. Taking responsibility. That in itself frees the mind. The greatest idea that causes all problems, all of us, is that we're separate. Because even though we say to ourselves, I'm not separate, I know I'm not. I feel a connection to everyone. I have our ideas when we can share them that are in harmony or in harmony with each other. It's uplifting. So we're connected. We're connected in some way. But in the reality of life, I look at each we look at each other and go, but we're separate. I'm separate from that person. Well, truly not. Just a thin outer shell that we have fashioned through eons of time and is now our vehicle for expressing this divine nature. So, we have trouble discerning the real from the false. Most of us struggle with that. You know, because what we did in the past, we've always had an intermediary that spoke for us to God. We had a priest or someone who had more knowledge than us, or we assumed. No, Theosophy says, nah, that's your responsibility. We need to make that connection. Because that connection does lie within. You know, we talked about Atma, Buddhi, Manas. Those are eternal principles. They do not die. So we have individuals that have walked this earth, Jesus, Buddha, Muhammad, Paracelsus, that have benefited mankind. Well, theosophy says their manus has been lit up by Buddhi. And if we read the voice of the silence, that is what it's trying to do. Light up our mind with that Buddhi nature, which is compassion. So in this fourth round, our fourth principle of Kama will be developed, will be perfected. We can think of nothing else, but compassion will be truly understood. But that's on the wider scope of things. That's when we sit alone and we contemplate who we are and where we are and try to dig within to identify that witness, that calmness. But what about our daily life? Well, we tell ourselves how we're going to live today. I am. How many times do we say that? How that directs our life when we say it out loud. So you say, I'm tired. I'm hungry. No, you are not those things. Again, we've been taught to identify with the body. It's only natural, but you are not. You have those feelings. Another function of the mind. That we are mind beings. Our reality, we live in our mind. The outer world is just a reminder that we have things to deal with here that are manifesting, whether manifesting through our thought. That's where it all began. So now we live in a world that we're wondering what is true and what is false. It's said that mind is bound by desire. So there's our key. If mind is bound by desire, what do we desire? What do we desire? Do we desire to know the truth? Do we desire to free our mind and consider things as they are, not as we wish they would be, or they could be, but how they are? And see the truth. It may not be pretty, it may not be what we want, but we have to be honest with ourselves. And that honesty comes from a looking within and realizing that our mind is a reflection of our soul. Our soul can never manifest, it can only reflect itself on our being. So we have to make ourselves, as stated in our reading, to make ourselves better able to help and teach others, we have to come to an understanding of who we are and ourselves and the powers we have. We are gods. We just haven't perfected it yet. We have all those powers. Many of them are undeveloped. And they're being held back for a very particular reason. We have not gained control of our passions and desires, of our lower nature, of our lower mind. We live in the world of our lower mind. We have to build a bridge to our higher mind. And that is by searching for spiritual truths. That's the only thing that will free the mind. So, and there's like an idea that, you know, when we die or when we're born, we're a new soul. We're new. We're brand spanking new. And that when we die, we just go into eternity. And what is that? And the mind of a rational human being sometimes says, that doesn't sound really, I can't understand that. And even those that believe it, because they think they're doing what they've been told, that death is simply a change of consciousness. It's not, it's an ending of the physical, but it's not an ending of the spiritual. Those ideas are true. The ideas that are temporary and false fall away. And the more we build up in our nature these higher ideals and ethics, then we will be better able to help and teach others. You know, the ideas that we try to bring forward is that we are all one. How can I say that? How can that be said? Well, Atma Buddhi, everything is Atma Buddhi. Every material aspect of life is Atma Buddhi. Manas and potential. And this potential follows the evolution of life from the lowest to the highest. And when man becomes self-conscious, then he has to choose the true from the false, the ever fleeting from the everlasting. That we go forward now through our own inquiry, our own checking, testing, and verifying of what is true. And the journey does not stop. We are only beginning the journey. Our journey consists of getting control of our lower nature, becoming the masters of our own being. That is enough for one lifetime, to become cognizant of one of our many faults and try to bring them back into harmony. Life will show us what we need to learn. Take it as an opportunity that it may free the mind, but beware of that which enslaves it. These are ideas, and ideas rule the world. Now, I'm hoping you have some ideas. So we'll open this up for ideas. Theosophy Hall.
So, you know, we read that one of the root causes in the Western world that the mind of humanity is enslaved is this idea that we are born with original sin, that we are born tainted. The theosophical teaching is that we all are, in essence, one with the universal oversoul. But for some reason, this glorious religion of Christianity that has so much good in it is telling people you're born as a sinner and that's what God did to you. What's going on there, and how is it that such an idea enslaves the mind?
Did you get that? Yes. Well, it goes back to the fact of looking outside ourselves for the answer. That's what enslaves the mind, where we're looking for the answer. In countries where Buddhism is practiced, you have a searching within. And you don't have the same kind of outward materialistic view of life. When we look out, we think the reality is outside of us. So that's the foment of materialism. Because what? I'm looking at you, you're separate. You're separate. Don't tell me we're not separate. But when you consider it, we're not separate. Only by degrees are we different. Some look prettier, some look tired, but all look like they're trying to find an answer. Otherwise, we wouldn't be here. JCS.
One of the most, I want to say, fun aspects of being a student, but it's invigorating, it's enlightening, is to study historical past and compare it to the present and try to see what the commonalities are. So the question about the source of original sin and why this was such an imposition, an enslavement of the human spirit. We can look back to 2,000 years ago, or around 300, 400, 500 of the Common Era, and we can see the role of the rise of Christian nationalism, where church and state were united, and there were all these complex motivations about controlling the population. Then we can fast forward and, in our own independent individual ways, look around the world today to see that same kind of control aspect to many of the world religions. So that enslavement and control, that domination, limitation, is always involved in the thirst for power, prestige, and money. And we can combat that in our own lives, in our own way, in our own thinking.
Yeah, well, that's the only place where we can fight it. Truly, it's within ourselves. We see these things, and we say to ourselves, "How are we? How are we responsible? Why are we seeing this? What is my part in all this?" Perhaps when it was happening before, we never spoke out. We never helped. We never were an aid to our fellow brothers and sisters. We don't know, but we're here. We do know that. And we know that what the world needs is a philosophy. So how to live their life, our lives. And that's why theosophy was presented to the world in 1875. Again, even though Jesus and Buddha, Plato, Pythagoras, Plotinus. I mean, all these philosophers spoke of these ideas. They also all.
Yes, and also SL has a hand up.
Yeah, we saw that.
Yes, Theosophy Hall.
So, reference was made, yeah, to the early days of Christianity, the marriage of church and state and control, and which, of course, led to the Dark Ages. And our understanding is the Dark Ages were the result of, in our words, the enslaved mind of fear of the church, fear of going to hell, fear of not doing what you're supposed to do, and ignorance, false ideas, it would seem. False ideas in any way would enslave the mind. So we're bringing about the result of this. Also, is the idea of we're born, we die, that's it, it's over. And yet, there are religions in the world and historically civilizations that have always recognized reincarnation. So, could it be that fear and ignorance have to do with the fact? We're getting caught up on our thing. The mind of man is enslaved. If the mind is enslaved, then man is enslaved to the material world. The idea in Theosophy is to raise above it and see what it's not. But if we live in fear and ignorance, we can't do that because we don't believe that we have the power to raise ourselves.
Well, it is correct that fear stops all progress. Fear disables the mind because again, mind is bound by desire. And fear is a drawing within of a shrinking kind of feeling. So, yes. SL.
We think many people, when thinking about freeing themselves, have in mind freeing themselves from the misery of their life, the conflicts, the personal frustrations they have, the anger, the resentments. They want peace of mind. They want rest. They want happiness. Is that the goal? To liberate ourselves or free ourselves from these personal limitations? Is that the spiritual goal of life?
Well, we are to free ourselves from all that hinders our progress. That leaves what no constraints. Could you just repeat that again?
We'll repeat it, but maybe with another emphasis. Isn't the desire to just consider our own personal freedom from these limitations, these restraints, just a higher form of spiritual selfishness? Is there a way we can free ourselves from those things, but at the same time, help others accomplish it. So the focus is not just merely on our own bliss.
Well, again, even to reach those higher states, there's that element of selfishness of why you're doing something. I mean, that element pervades our personality. That personal nature is always, it's in full combat with our higher nature. Yes, SL.
So we'd like to extend that in the context of a few of the chats here. And one of the chat had to do with the following the path of Sin or the moon versus the solar path. And we think that symbolizes, as was saying, where's the motive? Is it personal or is it universal? And in the next chat where it talks about people thinking they have control over their lives, but they're only ultimately defeated. Well, as so long as we maintain some personal desire in our self-control, we'll ultimately defeat ourselves because our aspirations are limited. But once, as the chat says, we renounce that personal and begin to act for the universal, then we truly are liberated, as well as serving others. So we think these chats here point to that very point that was just said.
Okay. Any other questions? MHW?
Well, there's some chats.
Excuse me?
There's some chats.
Yes, that's all.
Well, we already covered two of them, but we can
Yeah.
read for you the third chat to maybe perhaps be commented on. We have the opportunity to be an emanation when our heart soul is clean enough to project the supreme personality or be the vehicle of buddhi gnosis. HPB talks about the difference between mediation and mediumship extensively, and how important it is that is to getting higher vibrations in their entities to reach us or speak through us. By contrast, the elementary beings speak through us, pretending to be deity when we lack the ability to discern. So we think the chat there is referring to discerning as the true from the false, that which comes from a higher nature and that which comes from our lower.
Yes, yeah, that we have to try to raise the lower to the higher, not the higher to the lower. So that becomes again a very basic exercise of becoming a witness to our own thoughts, feelings, and actions, always bearing close guard. JCS.
What came to mind was the analogy of a camera lens, that we are, as the photographer who's doing this kind of focusing routine with a camera lens, and if we focus too narrowly in a finite way, in a lower way, we are extremely one-pointed, yes, but very restricted. We're enslaved, we're focused, and it's held in a particular way. As we expand the lens that we're using, then we're more all-inclusive and we become more freed to have a larger picture and a bigger contemplation in which all of the details fall into place.
Yes, a broad understanding of life. We Mr. Judd says we are to become cosmopolitan. We should understand as much of life as we possibly can, and the nature of self. Okay, now we go back to the idea that desire is what really is the focal point in this point of our evolution. What do we desire? That's what comes to fruition. Do we desire to know the truth? Do we desire to help others as best we can, but truly help? I mean, these are all questions we ask ourselves. Many have prayers that they do. Well, we wouldn't call them prayers. We would call them affirmations or positive thoughts. Positive thoughts about oneself. I'm able to do this. I'll take my time. I can, I will. So we have to be the motivator. And that which motivates is the our desires. That's all.
In the talk, it spoke, it was presented the idea that from the perspective of the immortal ego, that spiritual being that we are essentially are, we are bound by the cycle of incarnation. We cannot help but be bound by it. It's part of the evolutionary journey. And we're also bound by karma, the effects. So from that perspective, being bound is the reality, is a relative reality of life for us. So what does it mean then when we hear that expression to be karma-less, to liberate ourselves from the cycle of incarnation? We read about that in devotional books.
How do we produce harmony within our nature? We see examples of that with beings who have overcome our lower nature and have developed our higher nature. A Buddhas, a Jesus, Apollonius, all these great minds. Theosophy Hall.
Yeah, there's two hands here. First, in the glossary, kama is listed as evil desire, lust, and volition, cleaving to existence. But Kamadeva is the god of love. Kama is the first conscious, all-embracing desire for universal love, good, and all that lives and feels. Needs help and kindness. It's the first feeling of infinite tender compassion and mercy that arose in the consciousness of the creative one force as soon as it came into life and being as a ray from the absolute. So it goes on quite a bit more in the glossary, but that Kamadeva is actually the antidote to kama, in a sense. It's that all-embracing desire for universal good, love, all that lives and feels and needs help. And we're here to help one another, really. We help ourselves by helping others, don't we? As long as we're not thinking of ourselves first.
Well, even if we do sometimes, we try to go back on the path and try to be as impersonal as we can possibly be.
And there's a hand here as well in the hall.
Please.
Actually, it's kind of similar to what we said and what was said a couple of speakers ago that had to do with desire. Very often when we talk of desire, people think it's just automatically like my personal stuff. But if we're going to desire to be of greater service to free the mind, there's desire takes two directions. One would be desire as ambition, what we want, authority over people, more money, more power, more control. That's desire as ambition, which will only end up enslaving the individual who holds those desires. But then there's also desire of a higher sort, which is aspiration. One aspires to grow, to become stronger, to be more influential, so that he can assist others along the way and improve the world in the best ways he can. The difference between the two simply is motive. Why am I doing this? What's behind everything? What's driving me to do this? Is it in service to others or in service to myself?
And there's also a chat.
Okay. Is the brain the mind? If not, what is the relationship between the brain and the mind? The brain is not the mind. The mind is not the brain, but is simply a vehicle for the brain to work through the physical being. So there is a universal mind. So the mind itself, is something that is beyond our scope of understanding. Because our brain has been programmed to function on this material plane, and that our main concern with survival has been the physical plane. But only in those societies where there can be a time of reflection, a time of understanding, that these qualities come forward and these ideas again flourish. So,
SL.
yes, SL.
So this last chat really gets to the essence of the meeting today, but also the overall theme, the mystery of the mind. And once we understand that the mind being one incarnated becomes dual, that a portion of it is in contact and working through the brain, while the other portion is free and independent by nature. Once we realize that, our task of freeing the lower mind really becomes a matter of understanding how brain functioning, or how our senses, the bodily impulses, tie us down. So we're in a situation where we have to work through the brain as lower mind, but at the same time, we could free ourselves and not be limited by it totally. So, when we have thoughts of separateness, when we have passions and desires that are fed by our sense of separateness, when we act purely from the point of view of intellect, of logic, without any soul wisdom to guide it, we know that our lower mind is enslaved. But at the same time, we are given plenty of help in trying to understand how we can release it from those influences. That's
Yes, JCS.
And the other aspect is that if we are all one, then we may from time to time sense thoughts that we've not generated as individual thinkers. We may become aware of a passing idea that might actually be transmitted from somebody else through the astral. We don't know the source, but it's coming through our minds. If we can remain centered and one-pointed and recognize the thought, note it, and then transmute it, put it into a greater context, raise it up in some way. What we're doing is separating ourselves from that automatic thinking and transmuting the automatic thinking and then transmitting that new impulse out into the collective as well. So we shouldn't be flagellating ourselves for some little stray thought that really isn't ours, as long as we're not energizing it and reinforcing it.
Well, that's what we do, again, that we must have some kind of cognizance of our own being, our self, our thinking, our feeling. We just said that our feeling nature dictates to us many of our wants and desires. So everything has to be purified. And that can be done in the flame of spiritual knowledge. What's real and what's not real. And our place as self-conscious human beings, that we have arrived at this place where we are self-conscious. So either we go up or we go down. We either follow the dictates of our lower mind and our body, or follow the dictates of our higher mind and our eternal nature. That's the choice we are making. So, the Gita tells us how we need to act, how we need to be, what kind of attitude we need to develop in this Kali Yuga. So.
Well, in our heart, we may feel one with all beings and have compassion for all, but in this world, do not the people and things we associate with either enslave us or free us? Do we not have to exercise some discernment in the choices of our association? Finding ourselves, putting ourselves in close relation with those who have a similarity of aim and purpose and aspiration as ourselves, in our efforts.
Well, that's where we gather strength. When the impulse is ninefold, as it is this morning, that does go out into the world, into the universe. Not one single thought, when nothing word or action is erased from the mind. The mind holds the records of all our thoughts. So that, as we struggle to make the right choices, we just keep in mind, would this be something that I would find helpful?
We just wanted to make a quick correction, if I may.
Sure may.
There are 17 people attending this meeting.
Oh.
Total, one line and in the lodge.
Yeah, we didn't mean not to represent, and that is well taken. Well
Okay.
taken. I do not want to exclude anyone at the lodge, for the lodge is our lifeblood. We thank you for that observation and that correction.
Certainly. There's a quick hand here.
To ask a question about that last comment about who we associate with, the question of associating with other seekers who can empower us and teach us. But also, it seems that right now there's such a need for dialogue with, between everyone. I feel like discussion and dialogue is degraded now. There's so much polarization, and that there's a need more than ever for projecting the best example, and trying to make sure that we don't sort of denigrate or try not to interact with people who have different viewpoints than us, because that's the only way that we're going to have a chance of trying to put more people on the path. I mean, I think you don't want to yoke yourself to somebody who is really going to drag you down, but at the same time, there's a need to try to be respectful, have respectful communication with others with different viewpoints, and an effort to try to gently kind of nudge things in a more positive direction.
Friend, whatever we do to help and teach others is always the best path. So we've come to the end of our meeting, and again, we welcome you to our next Sunday's class, and then Wednesday in the key, and then on Friday. So have a good few days. We'll see you again on Wednesday. Meeting adjourned.
Thank you.